Good afternoon, everyone. This is Summer Minnick, Deputy Executive Director here at the League, and I want to thank you for joining our webinar today. We hope this session provides you with an opportunity to gain a greater understanding of the state's actions regarding management of the COVID-19 virus, the impact on local communities, and what you should expect going forward. Please type any questions in the chat box on the upper left side of your screen, and I will facilitate a Q&A at the end of her discussion. Before I introduce our speaker, I want to quickly update you on what the League has done in response to this situation. As you may be aware from our communication last week, the League has closed both of its offices through April 6. Employees have been set up to work from home during this time, so we are able to continue serving our members remotely. All League events through the end of April are canceled, and we are not hosting any meetings or events by other organizations in the League offices through that time as well. We have also restricted League employees from practicing in live meetings or participating in live meetings or events during our remote work period. To help assist our members in ensuring they have the most up-to-date information from the state and federal government, we will be continuously updating our resource page, which you can access on our homepage. In addition, we have worked directly with Governor Whitmer's administration to set up a streamlined process for local leaders to submit questions through an online portal, which is located on that resource page. We have been assured all questions will be answered as quickly as they are able. As always, if you have any questions, please do not hesitate to reach out to any of us, as we intend to maintain a high level of service to our League family during this extraordinary circumstance. And now, I'd like to introduce our speaker today, Elizabeth Hertel. Mrs. Hertel is Senior Chief Deputy Director for Administration for the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, where she oversees external relations and communications, finance and administration, and legislative services. Mrs. Hertel joined the Michigan Department of Community Health in 2013 as a Senior Assistant for Policy and Planning, and in February 2014 was appointed Director of Policy and Planning. Following the merger of the Departments of Community Health and Human Services into MDHHS in 2015, she served as Senior Deputy Director for Policy, Planning, and Legislative Services. In October 2016, she left that position to serve as Director of Michigan Advocacy for Trinity Health and returned to MDHHS and her current position in February 2019. Thank you for taking time, Mrs. Hertel, to talk to us. It is what is certainly a busy time for you.
Thank you, Summer. I'm glad that we were able to schedule a time, and I appreciate everyone's interest in what we're doing and their interest in reaching out to offer assistance in many, many ways. We really appreciate that and are feeling the support of the community and the citizens around the state. My name is Elizabeth Hertel. Before I begin, I just do want to make sure that everyone is aware I am not a physician. I am not a clinician, and I am not an expert in public health, though given my background and time, I have, a strong background. But I will caution if there are questions that I feel uncomfortable answering or I feel like some of our experts would do a better job of addressing, then we will take those questions back and we will get the answers back out to Summer so that we can make sure that we've addressed all of the concerns or suggestions that you have. I'm sure that many of you saw last night we announced the current positive test results in the state of Michigan is up to 53. We continue to run samples at our lab every day, and we expect more and more positive cases to be identified. We are operating our lab at capacity at this point, but we are aware that there are some other organizations, some hospitals and commercial labs that are coming online this week to help expand that test capacity in the state. We do have evidence of community spread, a term I'm sure many of you are familiar with now, if you weren't before this virus became prevalent. And our lab testing data is not giving us the full picture of what's going on as far as the disease in our communities. However, I do think it is important to remember with the uncertainty that we should not panic. We need to stay calm, and that most people who do contract the virus will have a mild illness, symptoms similar to the cold or a severe flu. But we do need to take this seriously because there is a population that we know is at very high risk of contracting more severe symptoms and potentially fatal symptoms from this disease, as we've seen across the world and now in the United States as well. However, we have not seen any deaths due to this virus in Michigan at this time, and our hope would be that we can avoid that altogether. Yesterday, the Department of Health and Human Services opened a hotline to the public for questions. I can so appreciate that you have developed a process at MML to take questions and get answers back for your members. But I would encourage you and everyone on this call, if you are getting asked questions by the public, please let them know they can call our hotline. It is 888-535-6136, and it is open and staffed 8 to 5 every day of the week. We want to make sure that everyone is getting their questions answered, but if somebody has experienced a medical emergency or has specific symptoms, questions on their symptoms and their health status, they need to speak to their physician. Somebody who is experiencing a medical emergency should go to the emergency room. If they are not experiencing a medical emergency, we would recommend that they call their physician. If they don't have a family doctor or primary care physician, they should go to an urgent care or another clinic nearby. Right now, our focus is on identifying the geographic areas in the state where the virus has spread. We know that we've identified cases in Southeast Michigan, some in West Michigan, some in Mid-Michigan. We have two cases in regions up north, one near the Thumb and one in Northwest Michigan at this point. Our goal is to figure out how far the virus has spread, and so we continue to prioritize tests from those geographic regions to identify the prevalence of the virus there. However, we do need to take steps to limit the slope and the speed with which new people are becoming infected. Because this is such an overwhelming virus and has spread so quickly, you may have been reading a lot of things in the media now, and so you may be familiar now with some of the many phrases that are being used, like flattening the curve is one of those, and using social distancing in order to flatten the curve. But what we are trying to do is limit people's contact with each other in public spaces, as we know that this is how the virus spreads. We should be acting like we have the virus at this point. Each of us should be acting like we have the virus at this point and trying to avoid contact with others. The governor has made some very important decisions and very aggressive decisions to mitigate the spread of the disease. Last Thursday, she announced the closure of schools for 3 weeks in the state of Michigan. This morning, over the weekend, she announced that she's limited gatherings of large crowds, over 250 people. And this morning, you may have seen an executive order that is requiring restaurant establishments, gyms, and other organizations or places that people gather to shut down until March 30th. Restaurants and other places that serve food can maintain their drive-through or delivery service. We've also implemented health evaluations for any visitor or staff coming into residential facilities, clinics, and hospitals. Again, these are very important measures that we're implementing to try to minimize contact between people and avoid the spread of the disease. our team at the Department of Health and Human Services, along with our other public health leaders, are working to make sure that testing is available to people when their doctor thinks they need it. Initially, the state lab could keep up with the capacity of testing in the state, but we have been monitoring testing requests daily and expecting that to change as testing increases. As of today, we are able to run 125 samples for testing per day. However, the number of samples coming in to be tested is now exceeding our ability to keep up, and the queue is becoming longer. At first, we were able to turn around test results in 24 hours. Now it is more closer to 48 to 72 hours. We know that there are, as I mentioned, private laboratories that are coming online and some hospitals that are beginning to launch their own testing capabilities as well. We are working internally to prioritize testing in the state so that we can understand who has symptoms, those who have the highest risk of coming into contact with someone with the disease, and those who are at risk of becoming the sickest when they are tested. We are putting guidance together for health professionals across the state on those priorities for how and when we should be conducting tests on individuals they may believe have been infected with the COVID-19. We'll be working with our public health and hospital partners over the next couple of days to disseminate that strategy and make sure that we're coordinating with the federal government as well on expanding our testing capacity. However, in the meantime, we continue to work with our local communities through you and through our mechanisms at the state level to ensure that we're minimizing contact to try to limit an increase in the positive numbers of people who contract this virus. So we know everything is moving very quickly. I can tell you personally, things today are very different for me than they were Friday, Saturday, and Sunday because we're learning new things all the time. We're being able to see some of the data that's coming in on the testing and getting an understanding of where and how it is being spread. I think what's really important that I want to emphasize with people is that this is a very serious issue. There's no question that this is a very serious virus. That being said, it's also really important that we not panic, that we take the steps necessary that we need to take to limit our contact with each other so that we can slow the spread of this virus and ensure that the capacity of our health system in the state of Michigan can take care of those people that we know are going to experience the most severe symptoms. I think at this time, I've talked for a long time, and I've said probably a lot of things that you've heard before. So I think I'd like to take some questions, and I think Summer is going to facilitate those questions off the link because for some reason I can't open it, so I can't see your questions. So Summer.
Well, I have one here that says, I recognize that we don't necessarily need to know who the positive identifications are and where they live. However, why can't the jurisdiction these people live in be notified if there is a positive identification in the jurisdiction they live in?
I am going to assume jurisdiction means the township, village, or city that they live in. And a couple of reasons for that.
I'll make that assumption too.
Yes. Okay. So a couple of reasons for that. So when we have a sample that comes in that tests positive, the communication that is occurring between the sample coming in and at the state is with your local health department. So we communicate that back to the local health department, and the local health department is then statutorily responsible for investigating and doing the contact tracing for that individual. There may be no, I think that, hard to say, but what we want to do is we want to be able to pinpoint exactly where an individual has been so that we can identify the small group of individuals or sometimes larger group of individuals that they may have been in contact with because this virus spreads through direct contact. So making sure that an entire community is aware that one person in that community may have tested positive doesn't really offer any benefits to the individual in that community. Additionally, we are bound under federal privacy laws on the amount of information that we can and should be sharing on the individuals that are being tested. And notifying a community would be considered identifying information on a patient. So under federal authority, that would be inappropriate from our perspective. However, if an individual was in a city building, came in contact with a government worker, that individual would and could be notified, and hopefully they would report that back to you as an employer so that you could take the appropriate steps necessary to sanitize any areas that either of those individuals had been.
Okay, there are several questions here that are for me to answer regarding changes to the Open Meetings Act to allow for virtual council meetings. And that is something that League members can expect to hear from us within the day. We are working diligently with the governor's office and the legislature on that to allow a mechanism for you to hold your council meetings virtually as you continue to prepare for this. So yes, that's an issue. We expect that it will be done potentially via executive order. We know that the governor's office is interested and committed to assisting communities with how they can best handle this under the circumstances. So you will be hearing more from us probably this evening. All right, going back to questions for Elizabeth. I have heard first responders will be prioritized for testing. What does that actually look like?
If a first responder is manifesting symptoms and they go to a physician or a clinical provider and it's recommended that they get tested, that test would be prioritized because as an EMT, they would be coming in contact with a large group of people. And many of those people may be high risk. And so we would know that they would be considered a high priority by the way that the lab submission reports are developed.
How long can the virus live on products and goods?
I don't know offhand, but I know that that information can be found at both the CDC coronavirus website and our State of Michigan coronavirus website, which is michigan.gov coronavirus. And all of that information is up on the website.
There's a follow-up here from this. Not the same person. With regard to refuse pickup, are there any state guidelines in reducing trash pickup to minimize the possible spread of contaminants?
We have not given any guidance at this time, and the CDC has not given any guidance at this time. But if that guidance changes, we will disseminate that immediately so that you are aware of that. But at this time, there has been no guidance on that.
Okay. I don't know who's better, you or I, to answer this one. Any suggestions on how to address community members that wish to attend council meetings?
From our perspective, and then I can defer to you on this, but from the state perspective, what we've been asking and suggesting of all of our employees and many of our trainings is that we have converted them to virtual so that people are able to view them instead of coming in person. And we have transitioned all of our state trainings in the Department of Health and Human Services, and I'm fairly certain across other departments, to a virtual model. But you may have more information on that, Summer.
Well, I was going to say, I think that if we can get some traction with virtual meetings in this specific time period that we're dealing with this crisis, hopefully that will be a solution for all of you. Okay, here's another question. We operate a rental banquet hall. We have a wedding scheduled with around 100 people. At the end of the month, the state has only set a restriction of 250 people. CDC is now recommending no more than 10. Is the state going to change the number?
I don't know if the state is going to change the number today, but given the new guidance coming from the CDC on lowering the number of individuals, even without that guidance, it would probably be a wise decision to try to minimize the number of individuals who will be present at in any group setting.
Questions are coming really fast. I'm trying to read through them. The executive order lists spas as a facility needing to close. Do we know if this extends to salons, hair salons, nail salons, et cetera?
That is a really good question that somebody just emailed me about because I had the same question. So hold on, let me open this email. We can learn this together. They may remain open subject to the limit on assemblage. For salon spa combos, the salon part may remain open. So we all just learned something new.
Okay, who is tasked to enforce the closing of bars and restaurants per today's order?
I do not know the answer to that, but I can find out, Summer, and we can get that information back to you.
Okay, thank you. Has there been any discussion regarding programs to address residents who are unable to pay utility bills if they are laid off?
Yes. We are working a lot within the Department of Health and Human Services in conjunction with LEO and at the federal level to try to identify programs that we can expand and enhance to ensure that people are not experiencing significant financial distress due to the response to this outbreak. So the federal government is working on passing a very large response bill that will include significant funding to allow us to expand on a number of programs that provide assistance for current low-income individuals, also talking about expanding eligibility to individuals who are affected by some of the orders in this response, and alongside with LEO, with unemployment benefits, so that we can make sure that people are not experiencing hardship because of this. If you come across a situation, a specific situation, you can feel free to contact that hotline or contact Summer, and we can try to identify some way to work with you and the individual to make sure that they're not experiencing a hardship that way.
Okay, we have a 100-unit public housing facility primarily for older residents. If we get a resident that tests positive, would that require the entire facility to quarantine?
I'm not being familiar with what the residence looks like. I couldn't comment on that at this point, but that would be a question that you would want to work with your local health department on, should an individual in there test positive.
Since the state labs are struggling to keep up with testing needs, is there any estimate on when private lab testing may get up and running?
Yes, absolutely. We've got one hospital that came online today. We have another one coming online tomorrow and two more by the end of the week. And then there are two commercial labs that if they are not online yet, they should be up by the end of the week as well. So we are able to this week expand that capacity of number of tests that can be conducted across the state.
Okay. I want to clarify that Elizabeth was talking about the state virtual meetings, and that is, again, what we were working on. Local units of government do not have that capability currently. So we want to make sure that our members are all clear on that. That's why we're working with the governor's office to help see if we can get some relief for that with an executive order in the meantime. Okay, I'm scrolling through these questions. Sorry, there's a lot of this great discussion, but I'm trying to facilitate here where we have some more. Give me 1 second. New York Governor Cuomo today said that local governments must operate at a minimum 50% staff. Anything like that expected in Michigan?
I haven't seen anything like that yet, but I know that we're having continued discussions on the best mitigation strategies. And again, everything is changing very rapidly. So while that determination hasn't been made today, that doesn't mean that it won't at some point in the future.
Are there estimates at this time to the impact of Michigan's economy?
I don't have those.
Okay. I think, let me do a quick scroll down. I've got most of the questions. There's another one that just popped up. Why has MDHHS not required limits on contact for foster care workers, home visits that put foster parents at risk, et cetera?
So the guidance that we have been giving our foster families and our foster care workers is that it is our responsibility as a department to ensure the safety of those foster kids and the safety and well-being of their foster families. At this point, we are still conducting visitation when possible. The foster care workers are being cautious in making those determinations to ensure that neither the family member, the foster family members, the child, or the biological family members are experiencing symptoms. And they have broad flexibility on whether or not they should try to conduct those sorts of visits via video conference or if they should be in person. We have not stopped asking foster care workers to go into homes, again, because we believe the safety of our children is an essential function of state government, but we are working with them to take all of the precautions necessary to keep people safe and healthy and mitigate contraction of the virus.
Okay. Are our senior housing buildings, which are non-nursing homes, getting direct guidance? I haven't heard any restrictions related to them.
I also have not heard any restrictions related to them at this point. Again, we are asking for, people in those facilities or residences to practice social distancing, as many social distancing practices as possible, and continue to wash their hands and avoid contact with people who are ill or have symptoms.
Do hospitals currently have sufficient staffing and supplies? Are there any expectations of shortages?
Based on the conversations that we're having with the hospitals, at this point, they have not indicated that they are worried about the capacity and access to care. Yesterday, I can't keep track of the days, I apologize, but we as a state have the authority to enact or to authorize different things in cases of an emergency. And so under state law, under a health emergency, LARA has the capability to grant or waive medical licensure for individuals that meet certain criteria who have already been licensed or have that appropriate education so that we can bring health providers back online very quickly. And within my department, We have the Certificate of Need program, which allows us flexibility to grant hospitals the ability to put additional beds in their facilities so that they can maintain appropriate access. So we're working very closely with the hospitals to ensure that they will have the capacity they need should we get to that point. We are doing our best to plan ahead so that we are not caught in a situation where if you are sick, you cannot get into a hospital bed.
Okay, here's a comment. I don't see an actual question mark in here, but maybe you can respond to it if you, you know, if you have something to say. We are also concerned about wastewater treatment plant employees and daily testing protocols they do as part of normal operations. Concerns are in regard to how susceptible they are to infection. We know their immune systems are stronger because of their jobs, but don't want to overlook a real concern here either.
We have not given nor received any guidance on extra precautions having to do with water. And so we are focusing on ensuring the mitigation strategy of preventing contact and social distancing to make sure that the virus is not being contracted from person to person.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, there was one question about us providing written responses to some of these questions. We can certainly do that. And one thing I can commit to all of you, if I overlooked your question while I was scrolling, we can go through after this webinar and submit them in the online portal I referenced that we're giving to the governor's office so we can ensure that we get a response that was potentially not part of this discussion. So, okay. Oh, I see. Wait, sorry. A couple more questions.
It's okay. I will have to wrap it up in about 5 minutes, though.
Yeah, okay. I got a couple more good ones here. All right. Any restrictions on public playgrounds? We closed ours today due to many families going there with school out. Oh, gosh. I feel like this is directed at me, Deborah. I live across the street from one of ours. But didn't see any official guidance.
That's a really good question. I actually have not seen any guidance on playgrounds and sanitation, so I will check in to that and see if they are giving any guidance or if we're just asking the public to practice, the hygiene measures that we're asking for with their own sanitation and hand sanitizer. And most importantly, no matter what, washing your hands and washing your hands and then washing your hands again.
Okay. According to MICIMS, EMS agencies across the state are reporting equipment needs. Will EMS supplies be available soon without their home county declaring a state of emergency?
Our Bureau of Emergency Management is working with the EMS section on identifying what equipment needs there are. State Bureau of Emergency Management will be coordinating those sorts of needs throughout the state. So they should be talking and working with our EMS section.
Okay, sounds great. Well, I am going to go ahead and wrap this up since our speaker is on a time constraint. Thank you so much, Elizabeth Hertel, for joining us today and answering these questions. As I indicated to all of our members on the phone, we will be answering some of these questions later. Oh, there's FOIA question. We the league will be answering some of these questions and we will look into FOIA extensions as part of the executive order that will address a potential OMA virtual component here for all of you. So stay tuned on that and check our resource page for updated information, and I am certain that we will try to schedule more of these webinars with the state so we can continue to provide you with the most updated information. In the meantime, don't ever hesitate to contact myself at sminic@mml.org or any of the other wonderful staff that you likely interact with on a fairly regular basis. Thank you all, and enjoy the rest of your evening.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.